Welcome back to Purple Row Radio. This edition is for Monday, June the 20th, 2011. My name is Greg Stanwood. I'm a staff writer at Purple Row, and I'm here along with my co-host, who is the, it's managing editor.
Managing editor is correct.
Managing editor of PurpleRow.com, Andrew Martin. Hey, Andrew, what's up?
Hey, not much. Good Father's Day today. Went home, saw my folks. We grilled out with my dad. That's what you do. Took in part of that Verlander loss. Yeah, it was super duper exciting until you what?
I worked all day.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's all right. Working a golf course on Father's Day is interesting.
Just like crowded with fathers on golf outings or what?
Well, you get a different crowd. Like, all the people who golf normally are like the same people who are like obsessed with golf and come by every day or like three or four times a week. So it's like a regular group of people. And then, so basically what happens on a day like Father's Day is everybody who normally golfs there goes and does something different because they don't want to do what they do every day on a special day like Father's Day. But then like all the people who never go golfing show up. Like, it's a special event because they never do that. And so you get a whole lot of different types of people and a whole lot of children.
Really, like, how old of children? I mean, we're talking about golf here, not, you know,
no, really,
a baseball game.
Really young kids. Really young kids who, like, just ride around in the carts or whatever.
Interesting.
Yes. Anyway,
yeah, golf is fun to talk about, but
it's really not.
Not really.
So this week we were just talking before we started recording here that we don't have a lot to talk about, even though this has been a pretty good week for the team. We've seen our first two series wins in quite some time. It was since mid-April, I believe. And so that's certainly cause for some optimism at the very least. Things are going better than they were a month ago. And even with the loss today, we're still pretty close back to 500. We're just one game back below again. And, I don't know if anyone actually expected us to win today's game, but, it turned out the way pretty much I expected it to. So.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, I hate to seem so defeatist about it, but Justin Verlander's just been outstanding this season and I had absolutely no faith the Rockies were going to beat him. And I don't mean to say the team is lacking punch. I don't think I have faith in any team to beat Justin Verlander.
And
the Rockies are certainly no exception.
And it really speaks to the team's improvements that they were able to take advantage and jump on the previous two games where we had slightly better odds and ensure that the Tiger series was overall a step in the right direction.
Absolutely. I mean, we saw run production coming early. We saw Chris Nelson's first two career home runs, which are just super exciting for him in general. And just saw absolute destruction on Friday of, why did I just forget his name? Rick Porcello.
Yeah.
Just not a great game for Porcello. Not a great game for Hamill either, but, you know, we won. We kicked the crap out of them.
Yeah, the thing I always love about Hamill is his post-game interviews. I don't know how many of those you actually watch, but he gives absolutely the best post-game interviews of anybody on the team.
Hamill does?
Yeah.
Really?
He never ever says the same thing twice. I mean, whenever they interview the pitchers, they always say the same thing. Like, oh, I didn't do well on this pitch, or
I missed my pitches, missed my spot.
Yeah,
but, you know,
exactly. And Hamill just always has an interesting way of phrasing it. He has this crazy good memory of like every pitch he throws. And so he'll say stuff like, yeah, in that fourth pitch on that one batter I was facing when he fouled it off, you know, I was really surprised that he actually so-and-so and blah, blah, blah. And he also mentioned, he just described in detail how his back felt. Basically the entire game, and it changed like four times. It was like, yeah, I felt a little stiff when I went out there, and then it went fine, and then, you know, in the third batter of the fourth inning, it tightened up again, and then it was okay. I mean, he gives you a complete profile of what it's like for him on the mound. He phrases it in such a personal way that it's just completely different than your average, like, post-game interview, especially with a pitcher. So.
It's always good to hear insight from pitchers. It isn't just your, you know, typical Ebinuke Lelouch comments, you know, oh, God willing, I'll go out there and pitch a good start next time or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hamill's also very self-deprecating. He is really hard on himself sometimes in his interviews. But he's somehow simultaneously upbeat all the time. I mean, you've probably seen him talk at least once somewhere. He's got a pretty interesting attitude. He's never really unhappy, but he will be speaking like he's unhappy when he is he'll be speaking like he's normal when he's completely angry. So.
Well, I mean, I guess with Hamill, it's just really good to see, I mean, it's good to see anyone being demonstrative and being able to give you a little bit more insight as to what's going through their head. Not to say the other pitchers aren't, or they're willingly holding things back or anything derogatory like that, but just, I don't know, it's kind of fun to see that the pitchers are, I don't know, human, and I think that Hamill, if he's willing to be vocal, it's great to hear from kind of a mid-to-back-end starter being very vocal about stuff, because you know they don't have the same road as ever. I mean, no one obviously has the same road, but, you know, hotshot pitching prospect coming up and being awesome like Jacine, it's almost like he has it going for him, and, you know, he's not that he's going to be arrogant about it. I don't know if he is or not. I don't think he is from everything I've heard so far. But with Hamill, you know, it's going to be more of a struggle going forward, because he's not the kind of guy who's going to put up a stellar ERA regularly, but he's going to put up decent peripherals, but... You know, it's not a complete given that he's, you know, major league guy, as it is with a lot of other pitchers. So, you know, hearing him kind of work through his own struggles in that regard, it's encouraging to hear, because, yeah, he's not super hotshot prospect. He's more, you know, journeyman caliber, even though he's stuck with the Rockies for a few years here. And he's going to have to work really hard to stay on top of things and to keep that spot mid-to-back rotation.
Mm-hmm. The other pitcher recently who had an interesting interview was Houston Street last night. I don't know if you caught that either. But Mark Stout went up to him after the game, and I can't remember the exact question, but you know how those Mark Stouts and Alana Rizzos, like, they have questions that are, you know, pretty easy, pretty obvious. You know, the idea is just, oh, I'll feed him to the player. He won't have any trouble answering it. It'll be a pretty dull answer, but that's okay. For a 20-second soundbite or something like that. Mm. Well, he asked a question about the defense, and, you know, he was just setting up Houston Street to be like, oh, yeah, defense is great. I'm glad to have him behind me, so on and so forth. But Street, like, thought about it for 5 seconds and then gave a really complicated answer that took, like, 60 seconds. And, like, they couldn't ask him any more questions. They had to go back up to the other post-game people. It was kind of amusing. And you could tell by the look on Stout's face that he was like, okay, we get it.
Oh, I like Stout, but that cracks me up. I mean, like we were just saying, you know, after a while, the typical baseball answers get kind of dull to hear. And so putting reporters back on their heels a little bit is that's entertaining.
Sure. So anyway, we can talk about what happened to Jose Morales now, since we don't have a lot of other subjects to talk about. Obviously, he becomes one of a few players we've had who have broken part of their body and continued to play a game and only found out afterwards that anything was wrong. I'm thinking, of course, mostly of Jason Hirsch.
Oh, yeah, that was going to say, if we don't mention him, I'm going to mention him, because that was, like, the most hardcore thing ever. Breaks his leg on a stress fracture, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the thing went right on the lower part of his leg, right by his foot. And, you know, you could hear, like, the thwack sound as it hit it, and everyone was like, oh, God, how can he stand? But then he's like, no, I'm good, I'm good. And then he threw, like, two more innings or something like that. And
he threw, like, a 5-6 innings of shutout ball or something like that.
Oh, did it happen early? I thought it happened in the middle of his outing. But
It happened early to middle of his outing, but he pitched, like, 4 or 5 more innings on a broken freaking leg.
Yeah, and he pitched fine. He pitched well.
Yeah, pitched great.
And, unfortunately, that was also pretty much the end of his major league career. But... Yeah, I mean, that was still very impressive. And for Morales, he was able to throw out a base runner with a broken hand.
Oh yeah, that's tough as nails right there. I mean, not that to take anything away from Hurst's, you know, fracturing his leg or whatever, but I mean, when you break something in your hand, it hurts like hell. I mean, look, Ubaldo was all screwed up during his opening day start with, like, you know, a torn cuticle, which is just like a little ouch and you can't grip something right. I mean, to be able to go and catch a baseball game, throwing balls back to the pitcher and throwing a runner out with a broken finger. Holy cow.
Yep. We have some tough as nails catchers that have come through recently. It seems like all of our backup catchers have had really terrible things happen to them during the season these past few years. Which is not a good omen for Matt Pagnazzi, who is the, who was called up to replace, Morales. And, so now we have 42 players on our 40-man roster after we had 36 about a week and a half ago. Funny how that 42. Happens. Yeah, because, well, two of them aren't active in De La Rosa and Morales, but they're still on the roster. They're still protected by it. They just don't count toward the number. So,
what? How does that work?
Well, you know that when a player is put on the 60-day, they don't count towards the 40-man limit anymore.
But they're not on the 40-man roster either.
Yeah, they are. They have to stay on the 40-man roster, otherwise they're not Major League Baseball players.
Well, he's not, because he's an injured player.
Yeah, he's not on the active roster. He's still on the 40-man roster. If they go away from the roster, they're not on the team anymore. If you look at, like, if you were to go to the major, or to the Rockies, not to Rockies roster, the website, but to the official Rockies roster on their website, both of them will show up there.
Really?
Yeah.
So I was always under the impression that being on the 60-day disabled list was like being on a, it's like its own roster. It's not a 40-man roster, but it's the disabled list roster.
The technical term is they're on the 40-man roster, but they don't count towards the limit on the 40-man roster.
Okay, I see. I guess it's just kind of semantics and how you discuss it, but yeah. Like, I'm looking at it right now, and you're absolutely correct that Jose Morales and Jorge De La Rosa are both on the 40-man roster, and then they also have that nice little DL tag by them, and because it says right here, there's two stars next to it, it says not on 40-man roster.
That's weird. I mean, what they mean is not counting toward 40-man roster.
Now, how do you know this?
Well, again,
not doubting your abilities as a roster guy, but I'm wondering where you read this or whatever.
Well, we're just talking semantics here again. I interpret this. I mean, if they were not actually on the 40-man roster, they would be not on the list. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, they wouldn't be a Rocky or whatever, but they have a contract with a team though.
Right.
Which makes them a Rocky.
Exactly.
They're not a roster you can pull from.
I'm
really curious about that.
What they're saying is, I mean, what they're saying is essentially the same thing. They're just making it simple for whoever's reading it. I mean, it's the same basic idea. They don't need to be on the 40-man roster for any other reason than the 40-man roster encompasses everybody who is signed to a major league contract of a baseball team. If you were to take them off of that technically, like remove them, you would have released them. What it's trying to imply is when you add up the players for your 40-man roster, don't count these players because they're on the 60-day disabled list. We're basically saying the same thing.
Fair enough. I mean, yeah. I guess I'm just thinking of the 40-man roster as being the 40-man roster, which is the, you know, players eligible to be, you know, immediately added to the 25-man roster or what, you know, whatever, the protection roster as opposed to something else. Well, this is a really boring argument.
Well, it's not really an argument.
Okay, everyone listening, we're sorry. This is boring. If you're not on the, whatever. Next topic, Chris Nelson.
Were we going to talk about other options they had for our backup catcher and why?
Oh yeah, sure. Pagnazzi. That's a better direction to go in right now. See, I figure Matt Pagnazzi got called up because he was one of the three in the spring training competition between Jose Morales, Mike McHenry, and himself, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And
sort of Jordan Pacheco for like.
Yeah, Pacheco wasn't really part of it. I mean, he was exciting to watch, but I don't think the team ever had any like really real considerations of calling him up, barring
I think
major injury.
I think there was like a 5-day period where there were real considerations. I mean, it came and went pretty quick. The reason I say that is because they didn't demote him quickly at all. They kept him there until the end. And, usually they do that for players they're actually still considering. Otherwise, there's no reason to keep him there.
No, fair enough. I never considered Pacheco a legitimate consideration for the majors anyhow. So, I mean, we saw some, I'm guessing most of it was spring training speculation, frankly, because, you know, without having press credentials to go and actually query someone on the Rockies front office staff in any way, shape, or form, we couldn't really, you know, get a definitive answer. We probably wouldn't get a straight answer anyways, because we're not, you know, in that boardroom, but I would not have given him the nod any way, shape, or form unless we didn't have Wigginton and he was honestly ready to play first, third, and catcher.
Right, and I mean, like I said, it was a pretty short period where that came and went. You can probably dig up a lot of media people who were hyping the Pacheco bandwagon and saying that the team was having discussions about taking him along. I know Tracy commented on it once or twice. But I get what you're saying. I think what you and I and most other people who never really considered him to be a factor was we just never changed our minds once, whereas the team was considering it and then not considering it over that same period of time. So they started where we were and ended where we were. Makes sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm glad Pacheco didn't get the call, frankly, just so he can possibly get more playing time, even though he's not really earning any playing time in the springs.
Well, he's going to have a lot of it now.
Pagnozzi wasn't exactly getting a lot of playing time either. He's played in 30 games so far this season.
Well, then I guess Pacheco was getting most of the playing time because they haven't been catching Eliezer Alfonso. He's been mostly a DH first base, hasn't he?
He caught for a little. The game I went to a few weeks back, he caught the last few innings of the game. I'm pulling up their stat sheet right now to get a look at the catcher splits as far as playing time goes. Let's see. Okay, Alfonso appeared in 23 games, 61 at-bats, so there's a lot of, you know, pinch hitty kind of stuff going
right,
on there.
And a lot of that was as a designated hitter.
Yeah, so 46 games for Pacheco and 30 for Pagnozzi. So Pacheco's gotten the bulk of the playing time, even though he's only posting a 680 OPS in AAA Colorado Springs with a slugging percentage 2 points higher than his on-base percentage. He's not doing miserably, but there's clearly a lot of room for him to grow still down there, and that's fine. He needs to take the time to, you know, get better at things like being a regular player and so on.
He sort of half skipped Tulsa too. He was at Tulsa. He was promoted to Tulsa at the end of last year, but he never played a full season there. He went straight to AAA for this season afterwards. So he's seen a little bit of a change in opposition, I'm sure. So he's probably going to adjust a little bit more slowly.
Yeah, stands to reason. I am kind of curious why they didn't call it. Well, I guess they don't really want Alfonso catching that much. He's not really a great catcher. He's, in the limited playing time that I mentioned, where did he go? With 23 games, 61 at bat. He's already made 2 errors at catcher in those 23 games, which isn't miserable. But with the whole DHing thing, it's clearly they want him for his bat. And right now he is batting, 311 with a 343 on base and a 705 slugging. So that, thank you, Colorado Springs, 6 home runs in his 23 games. And I don't know, I'm pretty sure that the Rockies just wanted to go with the defensive option first, as well as the fact that Pagnozzi has been with the organization slightly longer than Alfonso.
Right.
Pagnozzi, it's kind of funny because he let a lot of balls get away from him today, which is sort of surprising. We saw a lot of him diving all over the place, and that could have been Cook's fault as well. Cook had some decent movement on his sinker on Sunday with a lot of that downward movement, but one of the runs scored because Pagnozzi, actually that was on a Rex Brothers pitch. They got away from Pagnozzi and Brothers got spiked on the play. So yeah, the catching situation, I mean, Ionetta's still the starter. And I'm honestly kind of surprised they started Pagnozzi over Iannetta to catch Aaron Cook, because it's not as if Iannetta's never caught Aaron Cook before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it wasn't that great of a day for Rockies bats in general, judging by the whole Verlander thing, and they won 9-1, which is a little embarrassing.
Now, what game did Morales actually have that happen? Was it the first game of the Tigers or the last game of the Padres?
Because I just realized our brothers didn't record an out. Ugh.
Because it would make sense to catch Pagnozzi today if if Iannetta had pitched the past two games. That's just the standard way that works, basically.
Well, let me take a look here at Jose Morales. I forgot what game it was on, which is just kind of embarrassing. Morales, unfortunate to break finger. No kidding. I can't imagine anyone would be fortunate to break their finger. Let's see. Load faster, internets. Load faster!
We're devoting all our bandwidth to this podcast.
Okay, so it was on Wednesday. Morales injured his hand when he was hit by a foul tip off the bat of Rob Johnson in the top of the fifth, and Wednesday's 6-3 victory over the Padres at Coors Field.
Yeah, so Iannetta pitched. Iannetta caught the past two games. I said pitched, yeah. And then I almost said catched. That's not right either.
You're having a great day for grammar and word selection, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a little out of it right now, but it basically made sense to play Pagnozzi today, even though Iannetta would know Cook better. So,
I mean, and at least the upside there is that there is some familiarity with Pagnozzi and Cook, what with Cook's rehab assignments and good things along those lines.
That's true. I actually forgot about that. I was thinking that the advantage would be that Pagnozzi would have seen Cook in spring training because Pagnozzi was with the MLB camp and Alfonso was with the AAA camp. But you're right. It'll probably take time to figure out exactly which games Cook was down there, but I wonder if they specifically paired the two of them up for any reason.
That would take a little bit to look at, go through all their individual game logs.
Well, we wouldn't have to do that. I can look at the time when he was on rehab down there, but it would still probably be more effort than it's actually worth. Basically, we've already come to a conclusion of why Pagnozzi was picked, so I think it makes sense that it could be related to that as well as to the fact that Pagnozzi is more of a catcher than Alfonso is.
The only game that that Cook had a recorded decision in, just looking at this quickly, was a rehab assignment against the Fresno Grizzlies where he went 7 innings, gave up 3 runs, 5 strikeouts, 2 walks, and yes, Pagnozzi did catch him, and actually went 3-for-5 on that day too, so maybe he was comfortable with Aaron Cook pitching so well that he
that he also had a really good offensive game. He didn't hit well.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Then again, nobody did. Except
except
Tulowitzki and Wigginton did. But that's it.
That's about the size of it. We're really having this conversation about backup catchers. It's been a slow week, folks. I mean, Morales going down is definitely a frustrating move for him because no one likes to break their thumb, especially not when you're a major league catcher who is fighting to get more playing time and just started to, you know, heat up a little bit with a bat.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good opportunity for Matt Pagnozzi to kind of take the reins on his continuing MLB career, and, you know, we'll see how long he lasts, if he can get his bat together enough to rationalize a spot on the roster for him before they have to start looking at someone else.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Morales is obviously out for some time, a couple of months at least. So until that point, we have the door open really for not just Pagnozzi, but if he doesn't, you know, put his foot down on the opportunity and trap it, then we could look elsewhere as well. And I mean, backup catchers aren't generally too difficult to find. There's like 3 of them floating around in free agency at any given time.
That's the beauty of being a catcher and making it to anywhere near the major league level, is that teams will always be interested in you up to a certain age when there's other catchers who are basically the same talent level as you, just younger. I mean, we saw Well, Danny Ardoin floated around for a while. I'd say Greg Zahn, but Greg Zahn was kind of a journeyman, decent bat kind of catcher.
Danny Ardoin was at one point our first string catcher. That was,
that was just because of injury and stuff like that, but.
Was it really? Because.
I'm pretty sure. Well, actually, it was that year we had like the merry-go-round of J.D. Closser and Danny Ardoin. I think Miguel Ojeda was in that mix
The reason I say that is because we started the season with Ardoin and Ojeda. And my understanding was that they were gonna use Closser and Torrealba, but Closser didn't earn a spot, and then Torrealba got hurt. And they had to break camp with Ardoin and Ojeda. But this was back at the very beginning of when I was paying attention to baseball. So I may have that incorrect.
Let's see, 2005 was the year that Ardoin appeared in 80 games, batted 229, 320, 362.
And
with 6 home runs.
I didn't see any of that season.
Which is kind of funny they mentioned. They're going off. I don't know what they're going off of here, because he was listed as a starting catcher, even though Closser played in more games, had more plate experiences, and had a marginally better batting line. When I say marginally, I mean a 689 OPS as compared to a 681 OPS. I mean,
marginal. Yeah.
Screaming difference right there. Todd Green actually caught in 38 games that year for the Rockies as well in 2005. Maybe it was 06 then that we had,
It was 06. That's why.
There's one catcher whose name I'm forgetting, and it's not Geronimo Gill or Heel or however you pronounce
Geronimo
it.
Geronimo Heel.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yep.
It's not Ojeda. Alvin Colina, that was his name.
Yep, I remember him too, but he only caught like 5 games or something like
that? He played in 2 games, had 5 plate appearances, and got a hit, and an RBI, and a strikeout.
And then there's also Edwin Bayerine, who is a catcher in the next couple of years. He had some weird stuff happen to him in his brief time with the team, if you recall. Do you remember his first plate appearance?
No. Please refresh my memory.
Edwin Bayerine got up there, and he hit a single, but he hurt himself running to first base. He, like, tore up his...
That's right.
And so Bayerine... He got a hit. He was hitting 1,000. Everything looked fine, but he injured himself. So in like his first, he might not have come back that season either. So you get that weird line where he like got one hit and one at bat, and then that's it. And he got 2 innings or something like that.
Well, in between 07 and 09, he appeared in a grand total of 8 games, 14 plate appearances, and he drew 1 walk, so 13 at bats. 2007, he had 2 at-bats and no hits. 2008, he had 3 at-bats and got 1 hit. And 2009, he had 8 at-bats and got 2 hits.
I believe Edwin Bayerine was also the catcher in that game where the umpire accidentally kicked a bat into Matt Daly's way and hurt his ankle.
See, now you're going to have to make me look that up because now I'm curious.
If not, then Bayerine was at least the catcher in Daly's major league debut. I remember this because he was Daly got confused and tried to Daly struck out the third batter and didn't leave the mound. He didn't realize it was the third out. He was like going to pitch for a fourth out, and Bayerine had to like go up to him and tell him like, "We're done. You can leave now."
Yeah, that was Rockies and Cardinals. Rockies won 10-1. Aaron Cook pitched 8 innings of 1-run ball, scattered 4 hits, 4 strikeouts, 1 walk, 1 run. And Matt Daly pitched a perfect 9th with 1 strikeout. Maybe that was a game.
Maybe. You didn't just...
The only other option is...
That was
June 6th. June 4th is the other game, and... Yeah, no, he didn't. Matt Daly did not appear in that game, so we have to be talking about that June 6th game against the Cardinals.
Interesting. So not only did he not get the third out, he basically finished the game?
Yeah, he did finish the game.
Yeah.
Not only basically, that's exactly what he did.
All right. Well, stroll down memory lane there on a slow week.
Yeah, I'm one of the best parts. I wrote most of this week's Know Your Foe earlier today, because I had time on my hands while everyone was taking a nap at home. And it's kind of funny to walk in and everyone in your house is asleep, or your parents' house is asleep, and you're thinking, Alright, I guess I'll go sit on the back porch and write things. But so I'm writing the Know Your Foe by the Indians. We haven't seen the Indians since 2008. Despite having seen the Tigers more recently than that and other AL Central members, the Indians, they got swept in Coors Field in 2008, and it was just really funny to look back at some of the names. You're like, oh, I forgot about that guy. For example, Doug Bernier.
Yep, I remember Doug Bernier. He played one game for us.
Yes, he did. He's a defensive replacement at second base. Who else? Let's see. Jeff Baker was having that second base experiment at the time, which is why Bernier came in, because they made a double switch, put Bernier at second and Baker at back at first, because Helton was in the having the woes of a back hampered season.
Mm-hmm.
That was the season where his back was so bad that his left leg was numb on a regular basis, which is pretty scary stuff. It makes it just you appreciate this year's production out of Helton that much more.
Yes.
Just funny names like that. Omar Quintanilla was playing, because this is when Tulo had his torn quad, so Quintanilla was getting a lot of starts at shortstop.
Back when everybody was crying, Tulowitzki's injury prone.
Yeah. Well, I can kind of see both sides of the issue on that one still. I do understand why people would say he's injury prone, because, yeah, he got a lot of injuries, but, you know, tearing your quad's kind of a big deal. But at the same time, I wouldn't necessarily pin him with that injury-prone label based on one freak accident.
Is there a rain stick in your room?
A rain stick?
Yeah, I just...
No, I had a plastic bag on my bed that I wadded up and threw across the room. So, sorry for the rain, everyone.
That's just what it sounded like to me. I thought you were like had something with, you know, sand or something in it. You were moving around.
You got a comment on every weird sound you hear, don't you?
Sorry?
Said you got a comment on every weird sound you hear.
Oh, I don't. I only comment on the really weird ones. A lot of strange sounds come from your side of the thing. You probably don't think they get picked up, but there was that one time. Go ahead.
No, go for it. We're making fun of me, so we might as well keep it going.
Well, a few months ago, I guess, early in like our third or fourth episode or something after we renamed the show, I can't remember exactly what happened, but something weird was going on your side, like you were laying down on your bed or something like that, and...
I pretended to lay down on my bed, yes.
And it was, your headset was shuffling around so much that there was all this weird noise that I couldn't figure out what was going on until I talked to you the next week.
I'm just gonna set up a program that will just play random sound effects during the podcast. So when you hear it, be like, "What on earth is that?" Oh, that's just a cat falling into a vat of Jello or something like that. And it'll be like, "What was that sound?" And it'll be the most distracting podcast ever. And I'll just relish the moment of being distracting. I guess.
One thing that drives me crazy about other podcasts that I listen to is when they take that sort of radio sound effect mentality too far, and they have, you know, generic sound effects that they edit into the show all the time. And like whenever they say a certain word, there's a little spring sound or a little bell ding sound or something.
I always kind of that also bugs me. That's a good observation. I like to talk about baseball today a lot. I mean, the two of us are discussing show production. And one thing they do a little too much is their producer will put in random sound effects into there. Usually they're at least somewhat on topic. But the reason that they're kind of obnoxious is that they'll all acknowledge the sound effects. It's not so much an issue of, oh, they played a spring boing sound. Oh, that's so annoying. It's more like, oh, there's the sound. I was waiting for that. All right, back to baseball.
So
when goofy sound effects become self-aware, it's kind of, really?
That's just the way I roll with my podcast.
Don't worry, folks. We're a super professionally recorded podcast with... Yeah, no.
We are the most amateur setup possible. I know you had some stuff to say about Nelson and Blackman again. We sort of broke down their positions in the organization. Yes, not yesterday, the previous episode. And they're doing similar things, but Nelson has a lot more pressure on him than Blackman does, as we discussed at the time, and I know you were looking up stuff, and then before we started talking about more backup catcher stuff, you were headed in that direction. So,
it's just more to say that Chris Nelson he has this opportunity ahead of him, like we talked about last week. And the last day, I'm just kind of keeping a watch out. He played 4 games over the last 7, 19 plate appearances, batted .278, .316, .667. And I am proud to announce that Chris Nelson hit his first 2 major league home runs in this past week, which is just incredibly exciting. So, you know, kudos to you, Chris. And I, you know, hope you keep up the hitting. It's nice to see a bat coming out of second base. It's just a good thing. And on the other side, the other exciting rookie who's up right now, Charlie Blackmon, over his last 7 games, last 7 days, he played in 5 games. Still hasn't hit his first home run, but he did steal 3 bases out of those 5 he stole in the season. And he's batting .579, .600, .632 with a .1232 OPS over his past 7 games, or 7 days in, you know, up on the roster. And so far in the season, he has exactly an .800 OPS with a .395 on base to .405 slugging split, which is a very valuable batting line. You know, .800 OPS tends to be kind of, you know, one of those, everybody has those arbitrary cutoffs on, you know, what numbers are good and what numbers aren't good. Like .300 is a good batting average and so on and so forth. .800 is kind of that good OPS, and there's obviously different ways to break down that .800 OPS. So Blackmon's .395, .405 OPS, or .395, .405, .800 OPS is more valuable than, say, a .350, .450, because on-base percentage is a much more valuable thing to rack up than slugging is. Slugging is more exciting, obviously, but getting on base is more important than hitting a double as opposed to a single, if that makes any sense. So, you know, good for Blackmon so far. It's almost entirely been singles. He's, over the season, he's hit, let's see, 1 double, and the rest of it's been singles. And honestly, I'm okay with it, because it's not like he's just getting weak dribblers through the infield or something like that, and just completely running on luck here. I mean, a .410 batting average on balls in play is gonna come down, but from what we've seen of him so far, there's just not a book on him yet. Nobody's entirely sure how to pitch to him yet. And as a result, he's able to make tough at-bats and, you know, make pitchers work for the outs. And, you know, he's doing a good job of it. And he's showing a lot of the skill set that he's going to need to show going forward if he wants to stay in this major league lineup, which he likely will, given what we've seen so far. But once pitchers kind of start to figure out a little bit more of what he's going to hit, it's not so much, at this point in his major league career, it's not even so much what's going to get him out as so much what can he not hit. And, you know, once they start pitching him more off the plate and stuff like that, yeah, he's going to take more walks. He's not really a walk-heavy kind of guy in general, which is, you know, depending on which stance you take on, that could be a great thing, and it could be a frustrating thing for other stances. But yeah, we're 11 games into his major league career, and I'm really excited to see how he continues to adjust to major league pitching, because, well, so far he's got a .381 batting average, so I'm not complaining.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's actually something that I'm curious about, because I don't follow the AL teams too closely. You said you've written most of your upcoming preview for the Indian series.
That's correct.
I don't want you to, like, you know, repeat it verbatim or anything like that, but is there anything that you can describe to me or to the listeners about the team that may be of use in terms of understanding learning what to expect over the next series or so? Because I honestly can't really name much of what's going on, except that I do know that they were on a roll for some time and then have since sort of not been.
Well, I'm still waiting for the return end of a question and answer session that we did with a non-SB Nation Indians blog. That blog is, as soon as I get my email up here. I kicked them 6 questions over, kind of asking about, you know, what we think about, you know, their play so far this year, and so on and so forth. And Louis Paulus, I'm hoping I'm not butchering his name there, from Wahoo Blues, will be getting some answers back to me hopefully tonight, which will go into tomorrow's Know Your Foe. So in the meantime, you know, they're wondering more about our rough start to the season? Do we think we can come back? What's the big deal with Ubaldo? Are they buyers or sellers? What about the big contract? Stuff that they just, you know, because they haven't seen us yet this year or in 3 years, it's right. Hard to ask these, you know, off-season-y type questions.
Well,
still.
That's exactly where I'm coming from in terms of their team. You know, I don't even know, I couldn't even name a whole lot of players on their roster at this point. So.
Well, the guys we got to watch out for are Travis Hafner, who is their DH, and obviously will be playing DH as we're in an American League Park.
Correct.
And he's having, you know, after a very injury-plagued career so far, he's having a good season for himself so far. Grady Sizemore is also having a good season for himself.
Which is a good recovery, because didn't Grady Sizemore have a rough season last year or the year before?
He was injured.
Okay.
Goodness gracious, I'm yawning. Excuse me, folks. I believe it was a knee injury. And let's see, Grady Sizemore injury. Let's see what his injury was. It was knee injuries in May last year, so that kind of knocked him out for most of the rest of the season there. So,
gotcha.
You know, I don't want him to hit the ball against us. I want him to go 0 for the series. I want them all to go 0 for the series. But he's a likable player. He's young. He's exciting. He actually, before Tulo signed his big, not his big contract, but the first big contract that he got, that was the biggest contract given to a guy with, you know, less than an entire season of, or you know, with one season and change of service time.
Gotcha.
Sizemore had gotten a similar contract a year or two before there. I mean, he's a 2-time gold glove winner as a center fielder. He's fast. He's got power. He's only batting .243 right now, but, you know, he's still a good batter, and he's gonna be trouble. But the real guy that's interesting for me this season has to be Adstrubal Cabrera. He's been their second baseman since at least 2007, and he's had his ups and his downs in his career. And at second base, he's not the best glove. He's averaged to below average at best. And I'd say we have enough sample size by now to kind of get an idea of what kind of a fielder he really is. He's played some shortstop, but he's really a second baseman. And this year he's batting .301 with a .345 on base and a .510 slugging, and he's hit 12 home runs over their 70 games so far. Well, 69. Now we're not counting Sunday's game here, but he's batting third for them now, which either says an awful lot about their lineup or just says, you know, a lot about the confidence they have in him. He's a leader on that entire team in Fangraph's WAR metric at 2.6 wins above replacement. Other guys you want to keep an eye out for, I mentioned Hafner, who's at he's hitting the ball very well right now. He's got a .345 batting average. Only hit 5 home runs, but he's got a .552 slugging to go with that .345 average. He's only played in 33 games, which is a little something to worry about a little bit, but he's back and he's looking all right so far. So, you know, we got to keep that in mind. Shin-Soo Choo, however, has been one of the more exciting players. He's a 6-WAR player last year, and he's been striking out an awful lot this season. And just, hey, he's been okay. He's been below average with the bat, and he's still a very good right fielder, defensively speaking. And, you know, some of these hits will start to fall eventually here, but, you know, he's the kind of guy you don't want to take it easy on, even though he's kind of having a slumping season. He's someone who could do some damage against you. Past that, I mean, Carlos Santana is another interesting guy to keep an eye on. He came over in the Casey Blake trade with it from the Dodgers, and he was taken out last year in a collision at home plate that wrecked his knee pretty good. Not nearly as bad as Buster Posey's ankle injury, but Santana's, it tore one of the ligaments in his knee and then knocked him out for the entire season. But he's back this year. He is, you know, doing well for himself. He's only got a .222 batting average, but a .345 on base and a .382 slugging. It's a slightly above average batting line. And he's not the best defensive catcher. He's not bad by any stretch. And, you know, an above average batting line and, you know, passable defensive catcher. He's getting his share of playing time. And he's a likable kind of guy. I mean, a lot of that might be sympathy from having a broken knee and not broken knee, but a torn knee and having, you know, being one of those young, exciting kind of players and then watching a guy get taken out. It's the same kind of thing like Buster Posey, except we don't have to face him, you know, once a month or however often we play them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the best lineup ever. They have a decent number of above average guys. And like I mentioned, Hafner, Cabrera, Sizemore are all batting well above average, but it's going to come down to, I don't know, just can they out-hit the Rockies. Can they score more runs than the Rockies? That is how Indians will win this series. But no, their pitching has been really interesting this year. They got a lot of good starts from Justin Masterson, who has a 3.16 ERA so far, and his peripherals basically support that. A lot of good home run prevention. So hopefully the Rockies can pop a few shots off of him. Josh Tomlin will be facing on Wednesday. He's got a 3.93 ERA. And let's see, who's the last guy there? I keep forgetting his name. It is Mitch Talbot, that's right. Mitch Talbot will be the game two starter there. And he's one that we should hit, and we should hit him hard, and we should knock him out of the game very early. He's got average strikeout numbers, below average walk numbers. He gives up a lot of long ball. He has a 5.02 ERA to go with that there. The big thing to worry about for them is if they do get a lead and they're able to hold that going into the later innings, the Rockies could be in trouble. Because, like, for example, Vinny Pistano has pitched in 28 games so far this season. He's striking out 11.52 per nine, which is better than a batter an inning.
Yeah.
He's had a 1.44 ERA, which is massively deflated given a 200 batting average on balls in play. But add that as a setup guy with closer Chris Perez, with another setup guy, Rafael Perez, with Joe Smith and Tony Sipp. These are all guys who have an ERA that is below 2.5. And, in fact, everyone I mentioned except for Chris Perez and Tony Sipp all have an ERA below 2. That is going to be Cleveland's strength going into the series. If they can get a lead in the early innings, they've been very good at holding it so far, and the Rockies need to be aware of this. We need to be able to hit them, knock the starter out, and get into some of their weaker bullpen members, like Chad Durbin, for example. I believe Frank Hermann is still up with the team. These are guys who have less than pretty ERAs, and a lot of that is just bad luck on balls in play, if that's how you want to phrase it. They could just be very hittable. And, yeah, those... If you get to the good side of their bullpen, you're in trouble. But if you want to stay away from the good end of anyone's bullpen, but their depth past that is a little questionable as far as pitchers go. So we'll see what the Rockies are able to do, and hopefully they'll just be able to, you know, crush the starters and we won't need to worry about it.
Now, which pitcher did you say we were facing on Monday, tomorrow?
Justin Masterson.
Okay, because the probable pitchers list on the website says it's Fausto Carmona.
Oh, yeah, it is Carmona. That's my fault right there. I was looking at Masterson earlier this season. Now, Masterson they got from the Red Sox in the Victor Martinez trade, and he's an extreme ground ball. Well, not – yeah, he's pretty. He's a strong ground ball. I won't say that, like Brandon Webb extreme. So, but, yeah, no, that is my – thank you for correcting me on that. We will be facing Carmona, who is having a very rough season.
And we're going to miss Masterson.
And we're going to miss Masterson. Now, I remember even looking through the window because I was out on the porch and my dad had finally woken up off the couch and turned on the game, and they had the probable pitchers up. So, yes, my mistake. It is Fausto Carmona, who is, yeah, he averages strikeout numbers. Good walk, 2.75 walks per nine, but a lot of home runs, and that's all contributing to a 5.79 ERA. The peripherals say he's better than that, but not like a 4.81 FIP. We're not talking about, you know, night and day better here.
Mm-hmm.
So here's hoping that there's a good chance we could take all three games in the series again. If the bats and if we can hit them like we hit Porcello and who pitched in game? Phil Koch. I was at the Western Music Showcase all day on Saturday, and when you get a lot of people together in Denver at the same time and they're all using cell phones, you get no data reception whatsoever. So I was tweeting at Mondo Garage all day, so thanks for the updates there, Mondo. And, yeah, Phil Koch, where was I going with this? Yeah, Carmona, Talbot, and Tomlin. There's no reason we should be able to take two or three games in the series easily, and there's no reason to think the Rockies can't sweep this, especially when you got – when you got Juan Nicasio, Jolie Chacin, and Jason Hamill all going up against them, we have the edge in just about everything here. So this should be a good series for Colorado, despite the fact that Cleveland is still on top of their division. We should be able to knock them down a couple pegs and get ourselves above 500.
Well, we hopefully have that to look forward to. We're going on 50 minutes here. Is there anything else that you want to opine about here before we take off?
No, just apologizing for a boring podcast this week.
It's only about 50% our fault.
Yeah, exactly. Darn you, Rockies, for not being involved in more controversy this week. How dare you all?
Mm-hmm. Last week we had all that realignment stuff to talk about, and we actually got more comments on our post than usual. We got like 15 or something like that.
I know, right?
Yeah, it's just amazing. Yeah, so I don't think there's much else to talk about. I certainly appreciate that information about Cleveland, because I always feel this way when we get to interleague play. I always feel so lost. Like, I feel like I'm on top of all the MLB news. Like, I follow what the teams are supposedly doing and looking for and who they're getting and where they go. But when the time comes to actually know any of this stuff, it's all gone. And I forget, where they've been and what they've done so far. So, and of course we have the Yankees series to look forward to as well before we have our next show. I don't expect you to have researched as much of what to expect there, obviously, but I'm sure that series is just going to inherently attract a lot of attention from, a lot of, casual Colorado Rockies people who may want to tune in for that and so forth. I know it did with the Red Sox last season. So that always gets to be made a pretty big deal when I don't know that it should be. But, you know, it's the Yankees, name power, so on and so forth.
I'm just excited to see other teams.
Yep.
That's really what it comes down to. I get sick of the NL West after a while, as I'm sure a lot of people do. So here's hoping for an interesting series at the very least.
Yeah, all through the rest of the season through the All-Star break, we're going to be playing teams we haven't seen yet this season. So that's going to be
fantastic.
Nice. We've got Cleveland and then New York, and then I guess except that one makeup game with the Cubs. That's the only exception. Then we play the White Sox. Then we play, I believe, the Royals. Then we play, I guess, the Braves and the Nationals, and then we're at the All-Star break.
Man, I can't believe the season's already halfway over.
Yeah,
we're getting there.
Somebody on one of the broadcasts I was watching, it might have been George Frazier, mentioned that it seemed like this season has gone by really quickly. It's been a rather schizophrenic season, or at least it was when you looked at it at about early May, maybe, or mid-May. Now it's a little different because we had so much of that May period dominated by just doldrums of bad baseball, that's kind of the mentality that everybody has about the season thus far, even though we kind of had the exact opposite April. So, yeah.
So a needle-pulling thread. That's all I got, Greg.
All right. Well, in that case, we will be back in a week's time. That is June the 27th. And until then, on behalf of both of us,